This is Sea Change Radio, covering the shift to sustainability. I'm Alex Wise.
Allowing people to buy the food that restaurants were not able to sell at the end of the day for a discount price.
5 years ago, when we first started covering the food waste issue, America was throwing away enough food to fill the Rose Bowl every day. And, unfortunately, not much has happened to change that statistic. But this week on Sea Change Radio, we talk to someone who's doing his best to change the status quo. First, we dig into the archives as food waste expert, blogger, and author of American Wasteland, Jonathan Bloom, gives us some perspective on the amount of food we waste from field to fridge in this country. Then we hear from David Rodriguez, a Mexican immigrant turned Boston-based entrepreneur, who tells us about his startup company Food for All, a mobile app that allows diners a chance to purchase leftover food from restaurants at a steep discount. I'm joined on Sea Change Radio by food waste expert and the author of American Wasteland, Jonathan Bloom. Jonathan, welcome to Sea Change Radio.
Thanks for having me.
Tell us what inspired you to go on this journey to dig up as much inefficiencies and waste in our food system as you could.
I grew up in a house where we really valued food, and I learned to value it both as something to be enjoyed, but as something that you wouldn't just waste or squander. My parents were very good about saving leftovers. So I had that background. And then when I got out into the world a little bit, I was writing about food and had an experience at a food recovery group called DC Central Kitchen. And basically, they're a group that goes out and recovers any food that wouldn't be used but is still perfectly edible. So I'm in the kitchen that day. I'm volunteering. I'm making a vat of pasta. So I had plenty of time to look around and see all the foods that people were bringing by. And these were all really nice looking foods, rack of ribs, leg of lamb, nice vegetables. And so the epiphany I had that day was, well, what happens in cities and towns that don't have these kinds of food recovery groups? And how much food is wasted there? And that question really got me started on this journey.
Give us an idea about just how much food we as Americans waste. It's probably a pretty tricky thing to calculate, I imagine.
It is, and there hasn't been a fabulous estimate, but the best guess we have is that about 40% of all the food produced in this country isn't consumed, and that's about 160 billion pounds every year that isn't eaten. So a visual for people trying to wrap their heads around that big figure, a good visual is if we were to picture the Rose Bowl in Pasadena, well, every day America wastes enough food to fill that stadium. And not just the playing field, this is the entire 90,000-seat stadium.
Mm. And is that including crops that are left in the field unharvested?
It does, yeah. That's basically waste from all walks of life.
But that figure of the crops left in the field and produce left unpicked is one of the trickier things to try to calculate, right? You found that as you explored places like lettuce farms in Salinas, right?
Yeah, and it is difficult to quantify something that's essentially not counted. They know how many acres are planted and they know how many are harvested, but the exact figures are a bit tricky. So that's why I've really called for the USDA to study the topic a bit more and come up with more concrete numbers on just how much is wasted at farms, but also throughout the food chain. Because right now it's estimates. And you know what we've seen is when people do come out with hard numbers, like in the UK, it really leads to some significant change where the media latches onto the figures and really makes a splash, and it gets into the public consciousness and really affects change.
Let's start at the beginning of the food chain. What are some of the ways that we could improve efficiency and have less waste in our food system? Would it be more in terms of what we grow or how we grow it or how we pick it?
So starting at the farm level, we really should be harvesting all that we grow. There are so many resources that go into producing our food, mostly oil and water, that the least we could do is actually harvest it. And if we're not going to sell all of it, then that's where we need to have some sort of mechanism to distribute that food to people who need it. And especially these days where there's a real emphasis on getting not just food, but healthy food to those in need. Well, there's a real opportunity there, especially with some of the smaller and medium-sized farms, the places that aren't just growing commodity crops. So I'm not entirely sure of the best way to do that, whether it's the carrot or the stick, whether it's encouraging growers to donate and really beefing up the tax benefits from donation, or whether it's forcing all growers who receive federal funding to actually harvest all that they grow. I mean, there are a couple options there, and that's a discussion for later down the road, but it's a discussion that needs to be had.
I lived in Japan for quite some time, and the Japanese are famous for their packaging, and I couldn't help but notice how they would individually styrofoam wrap each of these enormous apples and peaches, and yes, they cost $4 or $5 each, but you could see the TLC that was in each one. Is that more wasteful or less wasteful, a distribution chain?
Well, it's an interesting question. The packaging issue really comes up where it's kind of opposed to waste. The more packaging you have, the less waste you'll probably have. At the same time, you're producing all that paper and styrofoam that then gets thrown out. It's an interesting one. I tended to err on the side of less food waste, and so more packaging is a little bit more palatable to someone like me, but I've definitely talked to people who are on the other side of the equation. But have no fear, that individual wrapping of fruit is coming to the United States. I just heard they're doing it with bananas, or will be, so.
With the increasing popularity of places like Whole Foods, you see these enormous displays of produce as far as the eye can see, all perfectly uniform, and we've come to expect that in a lot of ways, and that has a downside, doesn't it?
It does. And basically, to have that kind of immaculate display, there's a tremendous amount of waste that's happening further down the food chain, and at every step of the food chain before you get to that supermarket display. So that is something I'm trying to combat. It's kind of tricky to get people to change their opinions on how they approach food. And I understand that if you're in the supermarket and there's a perfect banana and one with a little black spot, you're going to take the perfect one. But at the same time, that doesn't mean the one with one blemish is trash. And there are many uses for that, whether it's selling it at a discount or making banana bread or what have you from it. Come on, baby.
This is Alex Wise on Sea Change Radio. My guest is Jonathan Bloom. He's a freelance journalist and food waste expert whose new book is American Wasteland. Let's talk about some of the inefficiencies in restaurants. You worked in a McDonald's. It's the largest, most successful restaurant chain in history. And I assume that they have thought of a lot of ways to cut corners. What are some of the things that you saw that could be improved in terms of waste?
Well, fast food chains have certainly improved in how much they waste, but there's still a fair amount built in where they're basically cooking a certain number of patties every hour, and then they're assembling the sandwiches as they're ordered. They're not just assembling them without orders coming in. But inevitably, at the end of that hour, they're going to have things that they have to throw out. And the largest source of waste came from the French fries, actually. And a tremendously quick half-life for French fries, about 7 minutes. There's actually a sign printed above the fry station that every 7 minutes you have to toss out that batch and cook a new one. And customers are definitely aware of that. And essentially, I've had many people, when I was working there, I had many people request hot fries. You know, they didn't want these ones. And that's just trash. It's disposable. And I suppose, given the price and the speed, it's not unreasonable that people would have that opinion of that food. But it is still food.
Do you think rising oil prices may be a big stimulant to lowering our waste on a global level?
Because oil prices are going up, it's only natural that food prices will rise because there's so much oil embedded in the food chain. It's really at every step from the fertilizer we use to harvesting and processing, shipping across country in many cases, to cooling, even cooking. And then after we're done with that food, hauling it off to the landfill. So the food chain is certainly oil rich. And as that becomes more expensive, the food prices will only rise. The short answer is that as we pay more for food, we're probably going to value it more. I think that'll be a slow process, but you never know with the way food prices have been going up.
I'm a little afraid to ask this, but why don't we take a few steps from my home studio over to my refrigerator so you can give me a tip or two on some basic ways to make my fridge a less wasteful place.
The number one thing I'd say would just be to try to put the newer foods in back and push the older foods to the front so that you are actually eating stuff before it goes bad. And some people I've seen where they'll have a shelf of kind of like things that they need to use up before too long. So the use it up shelf is pretty popular. What really drives me crazy is like during Thanksgiving where you eat and then the carcass will just sit out for hours as people are, you know, having pie and watching football and whatever. But making a little bit of an effort to get that stuff in the fridge quicker, whether it's after dinner or even after you've gone grocery shopping, I think that will help reduce waste and save you money as well.
Well, it's a fascinating read. American Wasteland, my guest has been Jonathan Bloom. He's a food waste expert. Jonathan, thanks so much for being on SeaChange Radio.
Hey, thanks for having me. This was fun. Anytime I get to dig into someone's fridge, it's a good day.
I got to work on these pots a little bit more. It makes me so mad, I don't know what to do. Thought I was a hub instead of maid. Like old red chili or something, all done got dried up on these pots. You'll never fix me none of this good food. Wait till that woman get home when I'm scraping all these pots. I've done your dirty dishes. How much am I supposed to take? When I left, I had cornflakes for breakfast. Now there's a bone from a T-bone steak. Too many dirty dishes in the sink for just us two. You got me wondering, babe.
To listen to Sea Change Radio anytime, anyplace, just subscribe to our free podcast. Simply follow the link from seachangeradio.com or search for us in the iTunes podcast directory.
I'm joined now on Sea Change Radio by the founder of Food for All, David Rodriguez. David, welcome to Sea Change Radio.
Thank you. Nice to be with you.
So, David, first, why don't you explain the problem that restaurants face and what you and your colleagues are trying to do to help solve the problem?
So Mainly we started this because we realized how much food was being wasted in restaurants, making more than $100 billion a year just in the U.S. We started working with the sustainability and global environment at the Harvard Chan School. So they've been really helpful to try to evaluate the environmental and urban impact of this app whenever it's going to be working in each city. So that's basically the reason why we started this, to try to create an awareness regarding how much food was being wasted and come up with an innovative way to solve it.
And how do you see your app helping to solve the problem? Why don't you explain how it works?
We are connecting people. We are allowing people to buy the food that restaurants were not able to sell at the end of the day for a discount price. Now we have a prototype, and we were trying to figure out which was the correct way to come up with a solution for this. So one of the main things that we realized is that we had to take out the menu. So whenever you enter to the app, you're going to see that there's pizzas available, hamburgers, salads, sandwiches, but you are not really able to pick which type of sandwich or salad you're going to be taking out. So in this way, we differentiate normal customers to the customers that really care about not wasting the food. We know that this type of app is not for everyone. Some people really want to choose the type of food that they want. Some of them might be allergic. Some of them don't want to just grab any type of food. So this, for this reason, we added another feature to the app. So for the people that do not want to use our app for themselves, we allow them to buy food for other people in it. So in this way, we are able to get them to people for people in need. So in this way, we are trying to cover every single person.
And you're partnering with some non-governmental organizations as well, right? I know that, like, for example, in San Francisco, I don't know if this is a policy nationwide, but in San Francisco, where I live, if you want to donate to a homeless shelter, or if you want to donate to the needy, like, a box cannot be opened. There are very specific rules about buying something for them. It has to be completely unopened. It can't be leftovers, basically.
Exactly. We are partnering with this type of organizations. They are the ones that are going to pick everything for us.
So how would that work? I guess there's three parties that would be involved, or four if you consider Food for All in the app. So somebody would go on the app, they're the customer, and then there's the restaurants, and then there's also the overseeing bodies that would kind of connect the restaurants with the customers. Is that fair to say?
Correct. Yeah. Considering that way, yeah, there are going to be four parties involved in the process.
Anybody who's worked in a restaurant has seen the amount of waste that comes from any restaurant, even the most sustainably conscious, environmentally friendly restaurants. It's pretty hard not to waste a lot of food. And I've asked people at restaurants, well, why are you throwing this away? And they're like, we've tried to give it away, but it's too hard. So you're trying to solve that problem. How easy will it be for restaurants to be able to deliver their wasted product to a waiting consumer?
So the restaurants are the ones that are going to set up the pickup time for the clients. So let's say that a restaurant's close at 10 p.m. They normally are going to set half an hour before closing, so that customer that decide to use Food for All can come and pick up the food directly to the restaurant. So there's no delivery through our app. So users are the ones that are picking up the food through our app. So normally, this type of customers live close to the restaurants that are working through Food for All.
This is Alex Wise on Sea Change Radio. I'm speaking to entrepreneur David Rodriguez. His company is called Food for All. So when we talk about your company, it's still very much in the early stages. You have a Kickstarter campaign. Why don't you explain how this is kind of an extension of your MBA graduation project, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right. The reason why we started the Kickstarter campaign was to to start getting the initial funding to continue working in our company, because so far we have been bootstrapping. We have just put all of our savings, personal and from family members. That's the first reason. And the second one was to start to getting some traction regarding people interested in either invest on us or like the media. So far, we have been successful in that part. We're still a little bit far from our goal in Kickstarter. We knew that it was going to be something difficult, but we're trying to contact every person interested in the subject, sustainability, climate change, food waste. So far, we're getting traction with this. So whenever people enter to our Kickstarter, all the money that they are putting in are meals that they are going to be saving from being wasted. So they have two choices. Just to give you an example, whenever they give $25, they are saving four meals. They can either wait until we launch the app and get them for themselves, or they can decide to donate them to people in need.
And you're hoping to roll this out in several cities. You're going to start out in Boston and New York, but it sounds like this is something that doesn't necessarily have to be confined to any certain city. It's a fairly flexible model, or?
Exactly. We will say that it's once we have tested the market here in Boston and New York, it's going to be way easier to start to replicate it in other cities. But yeah, initially we want to keep it like more control as possible, so we don't miss anything that might go wrong. So at the beginning, for the first half a year, we're going to be focusing in those two cities. But yeah, after we have tested the market, we see, every single issue that may come up with restaurants, we are able to quickly replicate to other cities.
One of the great things about, let's say, an Uber or any interactive thing is that it's available now whenever you want it. But it would seem like using an end-of-the-day food waste ordering service would limit the window when somebody could actually eat. How do you meet that challenge? Because a restaurant doesn't know exactly how much food waste they'll have until the end of the day. So how do diners eat whenever they want? Or can they only order late-night food through Food for All?
Yeah, it depends. Some of the restaurants we have been working with, they close at 4 p.m., for example. So in this type of restaurants, you have another option that is not all, until the end of the night. A second point to this is that most of the people we're going to be working with, they are really price sensitive. So they are willing to go at late hours to grab and pick to pick the food. Our initial customers are going to be like medium income, tech-savvy people, students, people that care about the environment, but also wants to save money. So they're really price sensitive and are willing to go late in the night or at any time that the restaurants have food available.
What about tapping into the neediest communities? Can this make a difference in the so-called food desert areas?
Right now, we are targeting the tech-savvy people, but we definitely have plans to try to solve the food desert issue. I can give you a definite answer right now how we're going to do it, but we're definitely working and considering that in our business plan. Beans and cornbread.
Beans and cornbread. Beans and cornbread. Beans and cornbread had a fight. Beans knocked cornbread out of sight. Beans. Cornbread said, "Now that's all right. Beans. Meet me on the corner tomorrow night. Cornbread, you ain't straight. Beans. You better wake up or I'll gas you gate. Been in
this pot. Follow the shift to sustainability with Sea Change Radio on Twitter at twitter.com/SeaChangeRadio and on our Facebook page.
This is Alex Wise on Sea Change Radio. I'm speaking to the founder of Food for All, David Rodriguez. David, why don't you tell us a little bit more about your background? You're not originally from the Boston area, correct?
Correct. I'm from Mexico originally. I study half of my undergrad in Mexico, half of it in Germany. I worked for 2 years in Siemens in Munich. After that, I was transferred to Brazil. I lived for 2 years in Brazil. After that, the company decided that in order for me to get a higher position, I needed to make an MBA. That's why I came to the U.S. 2 years ago already to start this MBA little by little due to the innovative ecosystem here in the Boston area. I got into the startup world, and I always was passionate about sustainability, and that's why I decided to combine the startup resources that we have to try to come up with a solution for food waste.
And do you look at this opportunity as purely a profit-based organization, or could you see it being a nonprofit?
I see it as a middle way, not entirely as a for profit, but also not entirely as a nonprofit. And I think that's the beauty of it. That's why we have received so many people interested on this, both from the media and from potential investors, because we are another option. We're not fighting against nonprofits, and that's one of the main points that I have been speaking with the media and from potential investors, because this is a process that is expensive. Try to save food waste. As you know, there are many nonprofits that are trying to solve this, but it is always expensive, though, so they are not able to come every single day to pick all of the food that is wasted in all the restaurants. So it is not an entirely sustainable process for them. So we are another option for them.
And have you looked at the competitive landscape? Are there any other companies or apps that would allow customers to pick up otherwise wasted food from restaurants, David?
Since we launched this Kickstarter campaign and we have getting some traction, some of entrepreneurs have approached to us telling us that they are working some sort of the same idea, trying to come up with partnerships because we are getting so much media, and we're definitely considering it. As I told you, like we are not entirely as a super for-profit company, so we are able to, partner with as many people as we can in order to try to solve this big issue. So, yeah, to be more concrete, yeah, there are some entrepreneurs working as well in the same idea. But still, there's no one established. So we're planning to be the first one that is big enough to make an impact on this issue of food waste.
So people can go to foodforall.us and click right there on your homepage to support your efforts on Kickstarter. David Rodriguez, thanks so much for being my guest on Sea Change Radio.
Thank you very much. It was a pleasure.
Sway the future to the past. Find what will endure.
You've been listening to Sea Change Radio. Our intro music is by Sanford Lewis, and our outro music is by Alex Wise. Additional music by Lettuce, Albert Collins, and Louis Jordan. Check out our website at seachangeradio.com. That's seachangeradio.com to stream or download the show or subscribe to our podcast. Visit our archives there to hear from Bill McKibben, Van Jones, Paul Hawken, and many others. And tune in to Sea Change Radio next week as we continue making connections for sustainability. For Sea Change Radio, I'm Alex Wise.